keeping you connected.
From the WJFF studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, bipartisanship. Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Congressman Mark Molinaro make a joint appearance in Monticello to tout their work on the PACT Act, the largest expansion of veteran health care and benefits in decades. We'll take you there. Eating upstate, Hudson Valley Restaurant Week starts Monday, and Aaron Shearer talks to the owners of the Blue Fox Motel who are participating. Sugaring season. Maple syrup makers are tapping the sap. Farm and Country's Rosie Starr talks to local sugar maker Steve Schwartz. And collaboration. The local events producers have started a new concert series Sundays at Nutshell Hall in Lake Huntington. We'll get the details. But first, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. The commander of Ukraine's ground forces says the battle for Bakhmut is far from over, and the Russians are failing to break through Ukrainian lines in the east. Here's NPR's Eleanor Beardsley.
Fierce battles are raging in several areas, but the epicenter of hostilities remains Bakhmut. Ukrainian Colonel General Oleksandr Sirsky said Saturday the Russians are suffering huge losses and retreating from the eastern city once again without success. Ukraine had losses too, he said, but far fewer than the attacking enemy. Ukrainians have welcomed the indictment of President Vladimir Putin by the International Criminal Tribunal. They say the world is finally realizing the criminal terrorist nature of the Russian leader and state. Meanwhile, Turkey's president has given the go-ahead for his parliament to begin ratifying Finland's accession to NATO, removing a major hurdle to enlarging the Western Defense Alliance. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Kharkiv, Ukraine.
The World Health Organization is calling on China to release data that may show a link between animals and the virus that led to the COVID-19 pandemic. WHO Director General Tedros Ghebreyesus.
This data do not provide a definitive answer to the question of how the pandemic began. But every piece of data is important in moving us closer to that answer.
The data was briefly posted online and then taken down, but not before it was spotted by international scientists. The information appears to show the virus may be linked to raccoon dogs that were being sold illegally at a wet seafood market in Wuhan. The WHO says more studies need to be carried out, but that this data should have been shared years ago. A representative from the district attorney's office in Manhattan is not commenting on a social media post this morning from former President Donald Trump. Trump said on his Truth Social network that he expects to be arrested on Tuesday. He does not say how he knows that, although he referenced what he said were illegal leaks. Manhattan prosecutors have been examining a hush money case. Trump made his return to Facebook and YouTube on Friday. On both sites, he posted a short video saying, quote, "Sorry to keep you waiting." NPR's Dara Kerr reports on his return to the social media sites for the first time in more than 2 years.
With two words, Trump announced his return to Facebook and YouTube. "I'm back," he wrote with an exclamation mark. The statement was accompanied by the video that apologized for keeping people waiting. Trump was banned from Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube after the violent January 6th attack on the Capitol, which led to the deaths of 5 people. All 3 companies have now reinstated his accounts. YouTube just allowed him back on Friday. Facebook and Twitter restored his accounts months ago. He stayed quiet until now. Just 3 hours after his return to Facebook, his post was already shared more than 15,000 times. As of Friday evening, he still hadn't returned to Twitter. Dara Kerr, NPR News.
And you're listening to NPR News. Russian President Vladimir Putin is in Crimea today. He arrived there on an unannounced visit to mark the 9th anniversary of the Russian annexation of the peninsula. His trip there comes a day after the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for Putin, accusing him of abducting hundreds of children from Ukraine. Putin has not commented on the warrant, but his spokesman called the warrant outrageous and unacceptable last night. President Biden said it's justified. In the NCAA women's basketball tournament, a sellout crowd turned out for a first-round game to follow a team that believes it has the tools to reach a Final Four. as Greg Eklund reports.
Iowa hasn't been in the women's Final Four since 1993, and junior guard Caitlin Clark is the reason the second-seeded Hawkeyes have a chance. She scored 26 in the Hawkeyes' 95-43 win over southeastern Louisiana, but says there's enough talent around her to reach the Final Four.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, when we've had some of our most successful games, you know, I don't score 30 points a game. It's a little bit over 20. You know, I got 10 assists. Everybody else is contributing, and that's what's going to take us far.
Iowa will face Georgia in the second round on Sunday in another game that's already sold out. For NPR News, I'm Greg Eklund.
There was a major upset last night in the NCAA men's college basketball tournament. Fairleigh Dickinson University is now just the second 16 seed to beat a number one seed in tournament history. Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue last night, 63-58. I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Lodestar Foundation, inspired by the maxim that helping someone else less fortunate is a path to a happier, healthier, and more meaningful life. Learn more at lodestarfoundation.org. This is NPR.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. In a comprehensive move toward health care for veterans, the PACT Act, or the Promise to Address Comprehensive Toxins Act, was signed into law by President Biden last August. The PACT Act expands VA health care and benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and other toxic substances. Since it was signed by President Biden, veterans and survivors have filed more than 1 million claims. That's over a 20% increase in claims than the same period last year. Yesterday in Monticello, New York, Representative Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Congressman Mark Molinaro appeared together, along with other local dignitaries, at the Monticello VA clinic to discuss the PACT Act.
We've been working on this bill for a long time. In fact, the first bill I ever introduced in the Congress was the Blue Water Navy Vets Bill, because during Vietnam War, members of our service were exposed to Agent Orange, but a lot of people were denied the coverage when they came home because they didn't serve in the right place. But in fact, they were exposed to Agent Orange, whether you're on an aircraft carrier, whether you're on an aircraft. And in fact, people who then worked on those aircraft for decades after were also exposed because the Agent Orange just stayed on that aircraft. So we got a Blue Water Navy Vets Bill done. This legislation corrects all the wrongs of the past. And so for any service member, any veteran who is exposed to any type of toxin is now covered under this legislation. We heard during the Gulf War and the Iraq wars in Iraq and Afghanistan that millions of service members were exposed to toxins because they served next to burn pits. These burn pits were dug in almost every camp all across the globe, and every matter of waste was thrown into them, from electronics to building materials to food waste to human waste to medical waste, and then all burned on fire with jet fuel. Well, the toxins that were created were very similar to the toxins that were created when the towers fell. And those towers were lit on fire by jet fuel. And so we knew from the 9/11 experience that these cancers are directly caused from those toxins. So this bill created a presumption that said if you served, if you were exposed, you are covered, and you don't have to be the one to prove what toxins were released, what was burned, what days you were exposed, which is a typical MO for a lot of VAs. So we made sure that everyone was covered and that nobody could be denied. This bill is now going to help about 3.5 million veterans around the country who were likely exposed from these conflicts and ones before. If you need help, my office is here to help you. You can email us at casework@gillibrand.senate.gov. We will ask you to sign a release that allows us to actually represent you and speak on your behalf with the VA, with any agency, any place that you deserve benefits from. We can work on your behalf. You can also get help from the VA directly. Their website is va.gov/PACTPACT. You can also call the VA at 1-800-MY-VA-411. So those are the quickest ways to get help if you're not getting it. If you've applied in the past and you were denied, you can apply again. Because this law, they now have to cover you. And if anyone denies you, you call me, because that's not going to be tolerated. So I now would like to bring up our Congressman, Mark Molinaro, who's been a great partner in the House and in local government for that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. First, let me offer, this is the first time that you and I have been in district. Well, your district is much larger than mine, as yes. It's the entire yeah. state, but together. I do want to take this opportunity. Senator Gillibrand was once my Congresswoman Gillibrand, and we worked very closely together. And it's a pleasure now to represent the district, in most of the district that you once represented. And that partnership continues. And I want to say that to all of you here, that partnership continues, especially for ensuring those men and women who return from service have access. And so while I'm without a doubt confident that if you reach out to Senator Gillibrand's office, she's going to knock down a few doors. But if for some reason you had to call my office too, we're going to be working, obviously, to provide access and to support you. And first and foremost, to the men and women who work at the VA, both here and throughout the network, we extend our appreciation and thanks. It is a tremendous job to care for those men and women who sacrifice in service to this country. To those men and women who did serve and are with us, we thank you, and that certainly is just not sufficient enough. There never have been a more courageous, more charitable a group of servicemen and women than the American servicemen and women who safeguard our freedom every day, and for that we are tremendously grateful. The PACT Act is an important expansion, in fact, the largest expansion of service to those veterans exposed to toxins and burn pits in over 30 years, with some 3.5 million American combat veterans exposed to burn pits since 9/11. This was a major step Congress needed to make. I commend Senator Gillibrand for her leadership, and most importantly, we'll continue to work with her and all of you to ensure that you have access to the support and services that you deserve. But most notably, most importantly, we recognize, the Senator and I, all of us in elected office, that we have the right to serve, we have the ability to serve, and we have the country we have because of the men and women who sacrificed so greatly in service to this country. So God bless and thanks very much.
Any on-topic questions from press or anyone? Okay. Thank you, guys. Oh, go ahead, sir.
I filed under the PACT Act for hypertension, high blood pressure, and went through. I've been under medication for the last 6 years, Losartan, for high blood pressure. I also have to exercise in the morning and the evening to keep the heart muscles going.
Yep.
I filed under the PACT Act after about a year worth of denial from the VA because Agent Orange wasn't considered a reagent to give you high blood pressure. Yep. With the PACT Act, they could deny me. I filed in the forms and everything again. Third denial, I think that was. It came back approved. However, yes, I do have high blood pressure due to Agent Orange exposure. I also have thyroid cancer due to Agent Orange exposure. However, the bar was raised. Now I have to have 100 diastolic pressure. Well, if I have 100 diastolic pressure, yeah, I'm on the nose. I'm on a floor.
Yeah.
I've been under meds for 6 years, so now it looks like the VA wants me to stop taking my medicine, stop doing the exercises, so my blood pressure skyrockets, so now I can reach the bar of 100 milligrams of mercury. Diastolic pressure.
We can advocate on your behalf. So this is exactly the kind of cases that I will get on the phone with the VA secretary and tell him how stupid that rule is and how they need to change it.
But this is one of the ways that the VA denies.
It's denied.
Gets away with things.
Yeah, it's the framework of the insurance industry. They figure out 100 ways to deny you. We will take your case up if you work with Steve to fill out the form. We'll call directly for you until they give us the right answer.
Okay, thank you very much, ma'am.
You're welcome. Any other on topics? Go ahead.
I have a question. With the PACT Act expanding all the cancers that can be service-connected, and I know there's questionnaires for screening, but what about early screening for actual, you know, for having cancer? It seems like people are getting diagnosed, but it's too late.
Yeah.
So what about, is there a push for early screening, preventative screening?
Yes. Yes, and if the VA does not implement that, we will make sure they do. So, but yes, you should be entitled to full screening if you served anywhere there were toxins, and you should get all the screenings to
no
see
age
what.
Requirement?
No, no. It's if you served. So the whole point of the PACT Act is if you served, you can get screened because these cancers are hitting people in their 30s. It's not an age thing at all.
That's why we're worried about.
Yeah. It hits you right away. It can hit within a year of coming back. We have people who are debilitated as soon as they came back. So screening should be available to everyone. If anyone is denied a screening, you talk to us. No one should be denied a screening. And we're very dedicated to serving everyone here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand and Congressman Mark Molinaro of New York's 19th District appearing at the Monticello VA clinic yesterday. There's more information about the PACT Act and VA benefits at va.org. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, it's almost restaurant week. We'll talk to the owners of one of the local restaurants participating. This is Radio Chatskill.
Small nonprofits receive 18% of their donations from online donors. That's why the Community Foundation of Orange and Sullivan hosts Hudson Valley Gives, an online giving day just for local organizations. The 8th annual Hudson Valley Gives event is happening Wednesday, May 17th. Nonprofit organizations wishing to participate can register at hvgives.org. Early bird registration ends March 18th.
Hey, thanks everybody for being here tonight. We'll play a little electrified honky-tonk for your entertainment.
Cliff Westfall performed at the Nutshell Music Hall last Saturday. You can hear that performance tomorrow night. Cliff Westfall live in Lake Huntington tomorrow night at 8 on Sunday Stage, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Well, this town sure seems awful small with your big mouth breathing on the air.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Hudson Valley Restaurant Week starts Monday and runs for 2 weeks. Over 140 restaurants will offer prefix lunches and dinners, and this year, 17 restaurants in the Catskills are participating, including the Blue Fox Motel in Narrowsburg, New York. Erin Shearer spoke to the owners George Nevis and Meg Sullivan for her segment, Eating Upstate.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves, your background, and how you found your way to the Catskills.
So George has been in the restaurant business, hospitality space, his entire career. So that's something he's done forever and had several restaurants in the city and then also over in Dumbo in Brooklyn. And then he started coming up here for to get away from the city. Over 20 years ago, 25 years ago, George?
Actually, it's a sad memory, but I remember exactly. I bought my lake house up here on New York Lake, which is one of the original ones that was then
in Berryville,
in 1938. Yeah. And I bought it in late 2000. And we needed to do, you know, a bathroom, running water, electricity, and things like that. And by the time we were done, it was the week before September 11. So I remember very well the first time I used my bathroom, it was the weekend after September 11. So I've been up here for a while.
This is not new for you. You guys have been here for many, many years.
Yeah. As we mostly weekenders, so or you know vacation time or things like that. Initially, and then we bought the property, the motel property, 2016, and it needed a lot of renovation. So we renovated for a little over 3 years. We opened the restaurant sort of the end of 2019 briefly, and then COVID hit and it shut us down. And then we reopened in the summer of 2020. And at the same time, the motel was getting open in 2020 as well. So we sort of used 2020 as the true launch because it was such a kind of random situation.
What were some of the challenges you had launching both the restaurant and the hotel in the midst of COVID?
No guests, no image, no traveling.
Yeah.
But I guess all the challenges that every single restaurateur and hotelier had. You couldn't travel, you couldn't move. You had to shut down the restaurant.
Initially we shut the restaurant for 4 months, because the only thing you could do at the time was take out, and we were brand new. So that was such a kind of take out in rural Narrowsburg didn't make a whole lot of sense when we were brand new. So we waited, we had to build an entire patio space outside the front of the restaurant so that we could reopen and open outside. So
because that's the only thing
that was the only thing you were allowed.
Late June, early July, I believe.
Yeah, we got it back open late July, early August in 2020.
The inside, I don't think we opened it before like September.
You couldn't at the time.
You couldn't.
Yeah, everybody had to be outside at that stage. So everything was outside. And then we had to follow all the regulations related to what the government was issuing at the time. You know, everything had to be spaced. Everybody was masked, certain sanitary issues, you know, the bathrooms were in the inside of the building. So how you manage people spacing themselves out to use the restroom. I mean, you know, just all of that kind of, which everybody was up against, that wasn't unique to us, but it was kind of a crazy time. The upside was at that same time, lots of city dwellers were trying to spend all of their time up here away from the city because that was such a crazy situation. City was such a difficult place to be during COVID, and people were looking for a way to get fresh air and be safe. And so you had sort of a surge of people moving up and interested in the area in a way that hadn't existed pre-COVID. So there was an upside as well as the down, you know, for all the chaos of there was an upside, which was it brought more people to the area because it was accessible. People could drive up in their own car and not take public transportation, partly because public transportation doesn't come directly to where we are. So that works great, you know, and when they found the area, I think people really liked it because it was, you know, beautiful, sparsely populated, it felt safe, you know, which I think was a big sentiment for most people at the time, you know.
It's my understanding that the Blue Fox itself first operated as a hunting and camping lodge in the 1940s. And then around 1955, it, you know, was converted into a more conventional motel, and it operated that way for the next half century. And then it was bought by Russians for a little bit. And by the time that you guys had bought it, it had been in foreclosure. Do I have that correct?
Yep.
That's that. Yep.
So this property started in late 30s by a Long Island state trooper, which is a motorcycle state trooper. We happened lost a leg in an accident. His name was Nick Dale. And apparently was quite a character. So we started where we are right now. He was called the 10 Mile River Colony. And this was in as you said, early 40s, late 30s, 30, 36, 38. And then in the 50s, he sold to Rick Lander's dad, to the Lander's family from the canoe outfitters. And he, Rick's dad, he was the one who, you know, they built the house and the restaurant and the pool. You know, we actually have a pool made out of a quarter inch steel, which is pretty incredible. So they took over on the 1950s, and they created what is kind of the current version of the Blue Fox Motel. And then they sold it to a group of investors, Russian, somehow in the early 2000s, and unfortunately, did not work out as it was planned, and they lost it to the bank. And by the time we got it in 2016, it's been in the possession of the bank for about, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Yep. So the property was pretty much a couple of years away from being demolished because it was severely destroyed. Foundations, pool, roofs, it was destroyed. So we got it. And, you know, we thought it was going to take us, you know, a year, year and a half to do it. And, you know, 3 years later, 3 years later, we opened it. And we're still working on it. It's these old properties, they have a mind of their own. And, you know, refurbishing and repurposing things, it's much harder than building stuff from the ground up.
Tell us a little bit about Hudson Valley Restaurant Week and its mission.
It's been a whole big push by the Sullivan County Visitors Association that all the businesses kind of get together in the hospitality space and work together to attract folks up to the area in general. And so there's been a big push in having us all get involved and participate. And they've done a great job of connecting all of us to get involved in supporting an effort like this. The area is still in development, you know, where we are in comparison to more of the right on the Hudson, you know, or the Hudson Valley that's been, you know, up and running for, I don't know, 15 years now, probably, you know, in terms of driving a lot of traffic. Yeah. This area is really new. So we're sort of new participants to the, to the whole area. We're excited about that. So the area, all the local businesses, and in this instance, obviously it's restaurants. You know, we've tried to step up and participate so that we all are collectively building the brand of the area, you know, in terms of being a place, a destination people want to visit and they want to come and eat great food, you know, have a great experience.
We are great supporters for anything that anybody can do to promote the area. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you are in you know, just going further south than us, I'm not even talking Manhattan, there's all kinds of people promoting, you know, different types of foods, different types of wines, different types of liquor. Up here, that enormous machine, which is individually done, does not exist. So anybody who comes up with an with a program, an incentive to promote the area, the restaurants, you know, the food, the wines, the tourism, all that, we are great fans of it because there is very little done of that. So the restaurant week, I think, is great for absolutely everybody because it does expose all of us.
Yeah,
and he exposes the area itself, because the area itself, it's very under image-wise developed. And, you know, the Tourism Association, they're phenomenal, and we are great supporters of them. And you know, we're glad to be part of it.
What are your plans for the future in regards to the Blue Fox?
we need to keep on trying to improve. There's a lot of work to be done. We also purchased a couple of other properties next to us that were severely dilapidated. So, and because we have this need for housing, basically when we do large events, for example, weddings, I mean, we only have a limited number of rooms, suites, cabins, and a house. So when we do weddings, it's there is a need for it. And people come to us and goes, where can we stay? Yeah. So we're big supporters of everybody else all around us. We cannot possibly accommodate. Mm-hmm. All the requests that we have. And we, you know, we'll just keep on working on the brand and the restaurant and finishing up the whole thing.
Yeah, I think some of the big things that the big way to sort of I don't know, categorize it is about creating some more unique experiences for people when they come to us. So first of all, we have a beautiful pool space. And so in the summertime, we've started to do some great events and great collaborations with other brands doing events and stuff there in the space. And it's a place people want to be. They want to hang out. It's a really terrific
experience. Our pool parties, if you've never been to one, you should try to come to
one. It's really, yeah. The property also, we've done a lot of work about creating, so it can be a wedding venue. It's not our full-time mm-hmm. gig. We have a lot of other things that we're doing, but we did six weddings last year. And it lends itself to doing, helping people understand that there's cool opportunities on the property to do all kinds of things. We did a couple corporate retreats last year too. It was the first year you could really do any events of any sort with any numbers of people. And the nice part about the property is that you, if you take it over, depending on your numbers, it becomes your playground to do all kinds of interesting things. So depending on who's coming up and what they're doing. So the weddings loved it because it was theirs, you know, for the weekend.
And the corporate retreats.
And same kind of thing with some of these corporate retreats.
And family reunions and gatherings, anniversaries.
Kind of refer to it more as these kind of, you know, fun, unique experiences that people can have when they're up with us, because we offer both the accommodations plus the food, and we're in a beautiful area. So there's all these great activities to do in town, go hiking, get on the river here in the Delaware. And so it's just, there's a lot of stuff in the area that lends itself to having a really terrific, community, experience.
That's Aaron Shearer speaking to the owners of the Blue Fox Motel about Hudson Valley Restaurant Week, which starts Monday. It's presented by Valley Table Magazine, and there's a full list of participating restaurants at valleytable.com. And more information about the Blue Fox at bluefoxmotel.com. We'll take a short break. This is Radio Chatskill.
This is Callison Stratton, host of Liberation Station, a new show that highlights female and femme-presenting musicians, the little sprinkling of history and goings on in our community. Liberation Station, Saturday evening at 7, only on Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. The weather can be frustrating this time of year. One day you need your winter coat because it's freezing, and the next day the sun is out and you're grilling on the patio. While that may be annoying, it's the perfect time for one thing, making maple syrup. Sugaring season started at the end of February and lasts until early April. As the long winter freeze abates and temperatures rise, the sap loosens and begins to run through the trees. Farm and Country's Rosie Starr spoke to one local sugar maker, Steve Schwartz, in Equinox, Pennsylvania, about harvesting that valuable sap.
2023 is a winter unlike other winters. It's not consistent in weather. How is it going for you up there in Equinox?
The maple season always is part of my phenology of what's happening during the season. And maples start to run their sap when it's consistently below freezing at night and above freezing during the day. So I keep track of the 10-day forecast, and in some years I have made the mistake of starting to tap in early February or January even, and some years I've had to wait until the beginning of March because there's so much snow in the woods that you can't even get in to tap. This year we had a very warm January, and it was warm into February, and I did not make the mistake of starting too early. I tapped when I thought it was setting up correctly. After the first real cold snap at the end of January, I tapped like the first week of February, and the trees have been going great. I have 20 taps in, a tap in each tree. They produce, on big days, they can produce almost 2 gallons per tree per day. There have been stretches where I've been collecting so much sap that I've run out of storage for it, have to boil every day. This last weekend, I boiled 3 straight days because I had no more storage for all the sap. But now it's kind of shut down. It's been cool for the last couple of days and not getting very warm or sunny during the day. And I've been able to recover. So now I have storage. Hopefully I still have some firewood and a little bit of energy and stamina to keep going.
Well, it sounds like you're being very productive. What are you going to do with all this maple syrup?
My method is very homebrew. I created it all myself. I bought a few cinder blocks. People gave me the pans and the pails and the taps. And it works, but it takes a lot of work to do it. So I might be boiling from 8 or 9 in the morning till midnight. And if I'm lucky, I can get through 50 gallons of sap in a day, which may equal about a gallon of syrup. But there's nothing about it that is efficient from a big producer's point of view. If I had to calculate what my costs were for, say, a gallon of syrup, I'd probably be something in the range of $200 or $300, just if I included my time. Since I don't charge for my time, it's all free, so I give it away. I don't sell it.
Oh, my. The lucky recipients. Describe the flavor of your maple syrup. First of all, does it look clear when you're giving it away? Do you put it in jars?
What I do is when I finish it on the stove. I bottle it in liter bottles and store it in the fridge because it's not really shelf safe at that point. And as it settles, I will then decant it into smaller bottles, which are properly processed, canned in heat, and they will be shelf safe. So we end up with 13-ounce bottles to give away.
Does a process include sanitizing the way people, after a good garden season, people are pickling or storing their jams and vegetables in jars? Do you have to go through that sanitizing sterilization?
Yeah, when I finally bottle it in the small bottles, it is all properly processed as you would for canning vegetables or fruits. You asked about the color and the taste. The color pretty much depends on the sap and the time of year. So my feeling is that the early sap has a higher sugar concentration, which means it takes less boiling time to get down to syrup, which means that it's clearer and lighter. The late sap has a lower sugar concentration, so you have to boil it much longer, and it will end up being dark, and it will be clear, but it will be smoky in flavor. Sometimes the syrup ends up fruity and light, sometimes it ends up dark and smoky, and it really all depends on the sap that you're processing.
Does the outside temperature or the tree temperature reflect on that color?
I think it's just the phenology of the tree. So when the trees feel that the weather is right, they start sending sap up from the roots to the crown to start producing first the flowers and then the leaves. And we always know that the maples have changed and it's no longer time to collect the sap. A, when it's warmer for a number of days, but also when they start to flower out and when the sap starts to take on either a yellowish or a milky look. At that point, the sap will not have much sugar in it. It will taste vegetal. It won't produce good syrup. So that's when they're telling us it's time to shut off.
Well, the wisdom of trees, we'll be grateful for the wisdom of trees. It sounds like a lot of work. What inspires you to do this?
Well, for me, it's just a part of the season. You know, I'm looking forward to ramp season, and we usually see the first little shoots of ramps in the next few weeks around the maple trees, because that's where the leaves have been kicked up as we collect the sap. And so I know that when maple season is here, ramp season comes next. You know, it's just part of the cycle of living in the country and enjoying the woods.
living in the country in Northeast Pennsylvania, would you say that it's specific to this region, the relationship ramps and maple syrup?
It's specific to where you can do maple. You can't do maple south of here too far. One of the lessons from the science of climate change is that as the climate changes, it is projected that sugar maple trees' range will move north. And there are maps that show that maples will move north from Pennsylvania up into New York and then beyond as the climate changes. And so far south of here, there aren't the maple trees that we enjoy and that make the maple syrup.
On the subject of ramps, do you think they're on target right now seasonally?
I don't know. That's a good question. They're usually a week or two on either side of the end of April. You know, it's a 3 or 4 week season. And when I started, in my mind, it was always the last week of April and the first 3 weeks of May for ramp season. These days, I assume that it's going to start the last 2 weeks of April and go in the first and second week of May. But who knows? This year, since it's been warm and there hasn't been too much snow, ramps could be a week earlier, or we could get a lot of snow and it could be cold for a number of weeks and they could come on time or even be later. It's just a matter of checking them out as we go and seeing how they progress.
Well, I think it's a beautiful relationship, ramps and maple. You taught me something new about agriculture in Northeast Pennsylvania. Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to add?
Yes, Rosie, I encourage anyone that is interested in maple and maple syrup to try it out. It's very simple. The equipment is very simple. You need a drill and a tap and a bucket and then a way to boil it down. I started out with a couple of taps and a smaller pan and trying it over a propane burner. And I built it up today where it works pretty well, but it's still small. It's 20 taps. And the goal is to make 3 to 5 gallons of syrup a year. You can scale up from there. You can buy commercial equipment. You can tap more trees and be more ambitious about it. The fun is in seeing the trees start to drip, seeing how much they produce, and tasting the different outcomes of your sap collecting and boiling.
It sounds like you use conventional equipment. Sometimes you're driving around the farm and countryside, you see blue buckets and hoses. Is that what your property looks like?
No, I have the hoses and the taps and stuff. Somebody gave them to me. Actually, Jim Cirio gave them to me. He also gave me a bunch of buckets. My property that with all the maple trees is flat. Where you see the tubes, by and large, it is the trees are on a slope, so the sap flows down the tube to a collection point. And it wouldn't happen very well on my property. So I like to trudge through the snow with 5 gallon pails, collecting the bucket on each tree and bringing it up to store. And this has been a good year because there hasn't been that much snow, but there have been years where I'm doing that with 40 pounds on each hand on snowshoes. And it makes me feel like the Sorcerer's Apprentice in Fantasia, hoping that I can find a broom or something to help me collect sap.
Well, you must be very strong carrying that stuff.
Yeah, well, if I wasn't in shape to begin the sap season, I'm in shape at the end.
Enjoy all the sweetness that you've produced and a bow of gratitude to the earth for sharing it all with us.
Thanks, Rosie. And you're welcome to come up and visit anytime and help carry some buckets.
I can do that. I'm strong. Thank you.
Great. Thank you.
It's Rosie Starr from Farm and Country, and Rosie and the Farm and Country team are coming up next at 11. This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. 2 years ago, Delaware Valley Opera purchased the former Nutshell in Lake Huntington, a performance space built in the 1890s. DVO then partnered with Collabination, a local company that produces live events. And now Collabination is in the midst of its first full season of weekly concerts called Saturdays Live from Nutshell Hall at the Delaware Valley Opera Center. Jason Dole met up with Zoot of Collabination in Lake Huntington to learn more about Nutshell Hall, Collabination, and the bands performing this season.
We're excited about the legendary status of Nutshell Hall. The building and the room date back well over a century. People remember this and go, I came here every weekend in the 70s. The memories that are instantly triggered and the excitement from the people that remember and have already been coming back and going, wow, it's great. It is just wonderful.
Yeah, my parents and aunts and uncles are that age. So you hear that. You're like, oh, the Nutshell. Like, yeah, we remember that.
Well, the memories are all good. And what we want to do is have people come back and create new memories. The vibe is still here. Some people say you can never go back, but Nutshell Hall never left anybody. And the new generations have to come back and see this wonderful performance space.
The vibe may still be here, but I think what's here that may not have been here in any of the previous generations' experiences, this level of technical infrastructure that you got for sound and light.
Well, yes. That's Collabination Productions, and that's me and my partner, Joe Murray. And we do productions. People know we're both experienced in the live event industry. And I'm now over here with Joe. And we are producing these bands and presenting them with the quality production that they deserve.
When did you guys start doing Collabination? It's probably longer ago than I'm thinking.
Well, Joe's history with it's Joe's company, and he founded it well over a decade ago. And matter of fact, he was doing Collabination productions here in the Nutshell 10 years ago. We started this whole renewed series basically on the 10-year anniversary of one of the shows that Joe did back in 2012. And the Delaware Valley Opera Center now runs the place, and we've come back to help them with their productions.
Yeah, how did the Delaware Valley Opera taking over lead to this? It's like, oh, Collabination Productions putting on other very non-opera shows here.
Well, my connection goes back much longer with many, many different organizations. 25 years ago, I was helping Carol Castell and the Delaware Valley Opera with their lighting in productions in the Tustin Theater. And I had a wonderful couple of years with them. So when they purchased this venue from former owner, they reached out to me to help with their opera production, and I came in and said, of course I can help, and of course I wanted to do our own productions here, because I helped Joe do the shows here 10 years ago, and now we were back, and with the resources to do even bigger and better shows than we did.
You seem to have a real love of making sure that there's vibrant arts and culture going on in Sullivan County.
Well over a quarter century. Matter of fact, I wanted to mention the very first sound gig I ever did locally was WJFF's Christmas show over at the Western, probably, I think, 96, you know. But as I've said, I've been doing this for a long time in the area with many, many different organizations. And now I'm fully invested over here.
Given that you've been working so long and hard at this, what does it mean for you to be working with kind of the next generation to come along, be working with some younger guys on this project like Joe and Collabination?
Well, they all hear from the old guy. And that's also one of my joys is not only doing the work, but passing on the experience that I've had 45 years of doing this. But yes, working with the guys, Joe's very experienced too. I mean, we've done the major productions around this local area. So we have the knowledge, the capability, the contacts, and I have all the stuff. So it's now time to utilize that and deploy it.
And we'll talk about how it's being deployed in terms of the lineup that you've got here. But let's start, though, by talking about how you're deploying it in terms of just what we're looking at here, the tech that you're bringing to this, and what will people see and hear when they're here?
We, Joe and I, have invested a lot in the infrastructure. We have a professional package of lights and sounds that I would put up against any of the venues within a 50-mile radius.
We're here right now in the Nutshell Hall. It is a hall. It's a big hall. You got wooden floors. It's a wide room and then a very long room.
The hall you're looking at is 4,000 square feet. I've put in a 24 by 20 deep stage. We still have the original stage, but we're set up in front of it. What people remember, just briefly, everyone remembers the blacklight paintings. I'm sorry, folks, they're not here. they went with the previous ownership. But we do have a fabulous light show. We've just installed a state-of-the-art line array PA system, which I'm very proud of. That again is similar to what you'd find down the road.
You know, it's a tall room, so you've got room to hang some lights.
Lights, exactly. So, the technical nerd in me, this is the highest I've been able to hang lights indoors in the county. And I've been in all the venues. And you're not going to see a 40-inch mirror ball anywhere else nearby. So that's one of Joe's accomplishments. That's another thing. We have a lovely dance floor for our performances. That's also something that we're trying to bring back. So when we had our honky-tonk show last weekend with Cliff Westfall, it was wonderful to see the dance floor under the disco ball filled with dancers kicking up their heels and having a great time. That's what we're bringing back to this venue and to the audience experience.
Is there any more of a hunger among people for live experiences now than, say, before 2020?
Well, I would assume everybody's climbing the walls. You know, it's been a long couple of years. And even the regular, it's winter, in Sullivan County, and we've just gone through February, and that's another thing that I wanted very much to do is there's plenty of things to do in the summertime. Okay, but on a February weekend, it gets pretty gloomy here. So we had a wonderful Valentine's Day disco party for the opera company, did that as their fundraiser, and everybody came out, and it was great for them to dance. Again, something to do here for the people who are here all year round, not just our summer visitors.
Your current schedule's going to the end of May. Do you see yourself doing a summer season? Are you going to resume in the fall?
Matter of fact, yes, I can't speak to it, but I just got information today that we're going to book summer dates. And we already were well into the planning stages of the fall series.
You don't just have a lineup here. You've got a whole poster.
Yes, we have a very, very exciting lineup. We started with Mystic Dead, and I mentioned before, Cliff Westfall performed last Saturday and was a huge success.
And people are going to be able to hear that on Sunday stage tomorrow night.
Which is really, really exciting. Again, Cliff is a local artist with a big following, so this will be a big treat for his fans. Anybody who couldn't, and Cliff's going to be back. And some of these artists that I will describe are already coming back for their second time. Squeaky Feet is a big name band. They will be here for the first time. However, the Mushroom Cloud was presented here by Joe almost 10 years ago. So they're already not the first band that's come back through these doors after a decade. In our late fall series, we had one of the artists, Shuiz, came from 10 years ago. And again, very successful, very happy show.
And that Squeaky Feet and the Mushroom Cloud, that's happening tonight.
Correct. Next week is Peak with Lee Ross. Jelly is a jam band. Dysfunction is what I'm told is a great funk band. So again, another opportunity for people to get out and dance and just let loose in front of the stage. Mad Cats, Mike Smith Group on 4/8. Annie in the Water is got a national following, and we're really, really excited to bring that act to this area. Our headliner on May 6th, Uncle Stump, has a great following. This is going to be their second time here, and they've just had their 200th performance in the local area. So they, the opening act for them will be the Electric Chords. That's Greg Castro.
Yeah.
Greg says he played on this stage when he was 12 years old, but he's been very helpful to this whole project. And we're really excited. He's already performed here, the Electric Chords, in our earlier series. He's coming back in May 6th. And again, his fans know we put on a great production for Greg. He's one of our favorites. He makes the old man want to go back out on the rock and roll road again. You know, that's how moved I get by Greg's performance. But I'm not going anywhere right now. I'm here. May 13th, Uncle Jake and the 18 Wheel Gang is basically bluegrass, and Callie Seastrand's also going to perform. She's a local artist, along with Sarah Hulse.
And that's coming up. That's May 13th.
May 13th.
And that's the Mother's Day weekend there, yeah.
Followed by Hilltop, and their opener, Static in the Attic, is one of our favorites from over in Carbondale. And finally, for this spring lineup, we have Muscle Tough. Their opening act is The Tribe, The Tribe is another funk band. Again, another dance opportunity that I'm really excited about.
And all these dates are Saturdays, and it says Saturdays live from the Nutshell Hall, and you know, we got some live electric sounds here.
I can just add, doors are at 7 o'clock, and bands hit at 8 o'clock.
And like you say, it's eclectic, it's electric, it's jammy, it's funky. There's a little bit of country, a little bit of rock and roll.
I have a motto which encompasses our gracious hosts. What I say is, from opera to Opry, jams to jazz, you're going to find it here at Nutshell Hall.
And that's all I wanted to clarify, too, that the people will still be able to see the Delaware Valley Opera performances here this season as well.
That's correct. So their plans are, they have three main stage productions that will happen here at Nutshell Hall. And we do the production behind it. So that's the benefit that they get from us being here. The traditional opera that they're doing is La Boheme, but they're also performing two original pieces, one called The Three Bears and another one called The Audition, which they're in the process of creating.
Oh,
so there's original opera being created, as well as original live music, you know, of every genre. And we're looking forward to also welcoming the opera company's audience to this place.
Yeah, sure. You might get some cross-audience pollination going on.
Well, you know, there's only one kind of music, and that's good music.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm old enough to remember when opera music was called long hair music, you know, or classical music was called long hair music. But there's both kinds of long hair music. All right, and you'll find it here in quality productions.
Sue, I want to thank you for talking to us, which is what I say to all the guests. But I really do. I want to thank you for all the work you've done over the years, just to keep arts and culture alive, well lit, and sounding good in Sullivan County.
That's my pleasure and my joy.
Jason Dole speaking with Zoot of Collaboration Productions at the Nutshell Hall at the Delaware Valley Opera Center in Lake Huntington. More information on Collaboration's current season is at collaborationproductions.com. And more information on the Delaware Valley Opera is at delawarevalleyopera.com. And a programming note, musician Cliff Westfall performed last week at the Nutshell Hall, and you can hear that concert tomorrow night at 8 on Sunday Stage. That's right here on Radio Catskill. In fact, we'll give you a little preview as we leave. That's all for this edition of Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
We are so thrilled to be here tonight. I want to say thanks again to Joe Murray and Zoot for the great work they're doing here.
Bigger than I was, I couldn't see past me.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, presenting Dierks Bentley, Friday, July 28th. Tickets on sale now. More information at bethelwoodscenter.org. From The River Reporter, serving communities in New York and Pennsylvania, riverreporter.com. And from listeners like you, who donate at wjffradio.org.
WJFF Jeffersonville, W233AH Monticello. You're listening to Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania.